The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. The information and ideas presented on this show are for informational purposes only. Please consult a business continuity, security, or disaster recovery professional before implementing any plans or ideas discussed on this show. The implementation of any protocol is at the sole discretion and responsibility of our listeners.
Is your business ready for a disaster, or are you prepared for anything? No matter the industry or structure of your organization, chances are there could be room for improvement regarding your survival business practices. This is Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. Your host is Pamela Hill. Join us today as we study what's working in business preparedness and what's still left to do. Here is Pamela Hill.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Mike Schlosser, and I'm with the University of Illinois Police Training Institute, and I'm the director. And I want to welcome everyone to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. I've been a guest and a guest host on the show for numerous times, and I really appreciate this opportunity. So first, I want to thank Pam for, you know, letting me kind of fill her place while she's gone today. And just get right into, you know, our topic that we're going to be talking about today. And the topic we're going to be talking about, which is very significant for the training we do at the Police Training Institute, is scenario-based training. And scenario-based training can be fun and educational, but developing and implementing this training does require some effort and some knowledge and some skills. So I'm going to go over some of those things today and hopefully help others develop some type of scenario-based training program that might help their employees or their organization. And at the Police Training Institute, we've been doing this for a long time. We've been doing this for over 20 years, and I thought this might be an opportunity to share some of our knowledge with you today so that you might consider implementing some of this scenario-based training. And scenario-based training, in my opinion, is probably the absolute best way to learn things. I know we've all been to trainings and continuing education programs that, unfortunately, a lot of times employees feel like, oh, wow, this is a waste of time. You know, even though this information may be critical and crucial to their jobs and organizations, some people just don't buy into it. You know, and you notice that too, because, you know, sometimes you see employees, you know, sitting at these mandatory trainings and their arms are crossed and, you know, they're rolling their eyes and they're looking at their watches and counting down the minutes and even seconds and until the pain is over with. And, you know, I think there's several reasons for this. I mean, a lot of this training is important, and if implemented the right way, you know, it's still good to have classroom training too. And I'll touch on that a little bit. But I think a lot of the reasons that classroom, especially classroom alone, is not as an effective training tool as scenario-based training is because the training is sometimes boring. I mean, we do a lot of sitting and a lot of listening, no matter how intriguing the instructor and how important the information is. And, you know, employees aren't always convinced or understand why the training is important. A lot of them are thinking, oh, great, another mandatory training. You know, the presenter has, you know, a brilliant resume and they're from somewhere far away. And so, you know, we bring them in and a lot of people are, you know, just sort of get that negative connotation at times. The employee feels a presenter is sometimes selling a product when you're bringing in new ideas, so they don't always buy into it. It's difficult for employees to see how this will benefit them in their work. And a lot of times it's just too much theory and not enough real-life application. You know, training has to be real-life application, and you have to be able to buy into it. And, of course, a lot of the trainings that some of us have been to, I'm sure most of us, is what we call the death by PowerPoint. Okay, and that is especially if you have that instructor that is simply reading it to you, because you're thinking, gosh, I could have read this myself, you know, and then after a while and you're sitting in this hour or 2 hour, 3 hour class and you're thinking, gosh, I'm going to try not to pick up this pen from my desk and start stabbing myself in the eyeballs. So, you know, I think if this is presented well and in the right way, this is good training. But we're not going to talk about so much how to do, you know, classroom training and how to make that more participatory and more intriguing. We're going to talk more about that next level of training, that is so important that people are going to learn so much more, take so much more away from it. And that is what we're talking about is scenario-based training. So in order to get, you know, a buy-in from participants in training, there's some very important principles that must be applied. So we need to have an understanding of why scenario-based training works. And this can best be done through the application of the knowledge that we're learning in the classroom through the scenario-based training. Okay, like I said, at PTI, at the University of Illinois Police Training Institute, we've been providing scenario-based training for over 20 years. And I can guarantee it's proven effective. I mean, this is serious training. Obviously, we are training police officers for simple things like community-based training all the way up to high-end training where their, you know, lives may be in danger or the lives of citizens might be in danger. We have organizations actually from all over the world visit the Police Training Institute to learn our philosophy, the development of scenario-based training, and a lot of them come and they observe our training in action. And to understand why scenario-based training works and why it's effective, it's important to understand what we call the basic adult learning principles or the adult learning model. You know, those of us in the field many times use the word andragogy, which is a big word for adult learning theory or adult learning models, you know, on how we learn. However, you know, really these same principles apply to all ages, even children. And, you know, you can use the word pedagogy, you can work for children or you know, elementary and secondary schools, or you can use andragogy for adults, but really a lot of the same principles apply to both adults and children. And so let's talk about some of the principles to get started, and then we'll kind of get into the meat of how to actually develop scenarios, how to facilitate scenarios, and how to improve them over time. So some very basic principles. Okay, we know about adults. We have something called the law of relevance. And adults need to know why they should learn something and how it will benefit them. We need to convince them that this will benefit them, whether it's productivity, whether it's getting better, whether it's advancement, you know, to make you safe. Whatever the reasons are, we need to get that buy-in from them. It must be relevant to them. And that goes into the second theory, which is the law of motivation. While adult learners may respond to external motivators, okay, you're getting paid to do this training, and if you get better, you're going to learn. But, you know, truly, it's more intrinsic, okay, internal priorities. It's about me, and that's what we need to portray so that they have a better buy-in to it. And something else about adults, we call this the law of experience. Adults come to class with a lifetime of experiences. And these experiences are so valuable, and they can take things that they've learned and understood and know through their socialization and their workforce and everything, which provide a basic knowledge that can be used in the learning experience. They already know things, so let's take some of the things they already know and try to apply them into these scenarios. We also have what's called the law of self-directedness. Adults resent and resist situations in which they feel that others are like imposing their own will on them. You must do this training. You have to do this training. This is mandatory. We really want them to feel like, oh, this is important training. This is exciting training. This is something I can learn from. And they may not buy into that initially. But once you start a scenario-based training program and they get the results from it, you're going to get more and more and more buy-in, and it never fails. for adults, adult learners, we have what's called the law of involvement. And again, a lot of these things apply to all ages, but learners must actively be involved in the learning process. You know, and the opportunity for direct involvement will produce greater experience than just mere observation. It's nice to see something and observe something and say, yeah, I see how that went great, you know, and this is what I need to do. But they need to be involved in it, and they need to have be able to you know, be involved in the discussion and articulate their own opinions and base things on, you know, their previous life experiences, whether they're directly related to your training objectives or not. The next one is the law of intensity and challenge is what we call it. The adult learner will gain much more if you can make the training intense and challenging. This type of learning experience is going to get much better training, much better buy-in than simply, you know, having something routine or boring. Now, that being said, you know, it needs to be challenging but yet doable. We have something called the law of repetition, and I think everybody can relate to this. The more you do something, the better you're going to get at it. So we need to not just go through a scenario and say, okay, you got it, good job, you're good. We need to, you know, actually have scenarios where they're doing them over and over. And this may be over time. Maybe this month we're training in this, the next month we're training in that, and they kind of build on each other. And so they need that repetition, because when you practice things, you get good at it. And if you think about it, anybody in any job, you say, well, wow, this person is really good at what they do because they have gained experience. And one way to gain some experience, other than just working somewhere for a long time, is to give them several different scenarios over their careers so that they can get this experience even early on and help kind of make that a little faster pace of learning. And obviously, we have what's called the law of feedback. Learning is always strengthened when accompanied by positive, constructive feedback. So it's important to be that have that positive, constructive feedback during those scenario-based training trainings. And if we're just constantly giving somebody negative feedback, then they're actually, you know, they're like they're not buying into it. They're you know, they're just feeling like I'm not doing anything right. I can't do anything right. I'm not really learning. So we really do need to make it positive. So I think we're going to take a little break right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about kind of the evolution from classroom to practice. And we're going to talk about developing scenario-based training, because how you do that is so important. So when we come back, that's what we'll talk about. But for right now, let's take a little break.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
From disasters to cyber threats, it's hard to keep up with the myriad of risks facing businesses today. Risk Partners Alliance is a consortium of business and technology consultants whose focus is to identify and mitigate threats to the operation of your business, your critical systems, infrastructure, and information security. We create comprehensive business continuity programs, including risk assessment, emergency preparedness, crisis management planning, technical disaster recovery, and information security services. We provide hands-on crisis leadership team evaluation and training through scenario-based practices. Our experts are widely sought-after speakers because of their passion, excellence, and unique training methods, and have a 30-year track record of providing risk management and recovery services to a variety of industries. Our proven plans have been put into action in every major disaster since 1989. Find us online at riskpa.com or email info@riskpa.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @FearIsNegotiable. You deserve some rest from worry. Contact us so we can help.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. If you have a question or comment about the program, please send us an email to info@riskpa.com. Again, that's info@riskpa.com. Or follow us on Twitter at Fear is Negotiable. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the program, everyone. And again, this is Mike Schlosser filling in for Pam Hill. And I'm going to talk just briefly about how it is still important to have some sort of initial training, whether that be classroom or some online training or reading materials. But we do have to have some basic knowledge, and that's kind of like planting the seed. Okay, so we know that, you know, we need to plant a seed before we actually have the scenario-based training in order to apply it. But remember, adults have a lifetime of learning experience that will become relevant to their training, not just what they've read, but, you know, everything that they've done in their lifetime. So this is a way to bring out their critical thinking skills based on these great experiences they've had in their lifetime, and that will help facilitate the discussions, the debriefings when those come into play. And then when they are allowed to explain, you know, why they chose to do something in a particular way, you know, sometimes just remember there's not always a right way or a wrong way to do things. Sometimes there's just more than one right way to do things. So, you know, sometimes, yes, definitely could be, okay, that's bad, that's wrong. But generally speaking, you know, if they're able to articulate why they did something based on their knowledge and training and based on their life experiences, we need to keep that in mind. So after the classroom and after basic knowledge, we need to be able to apply those into scenario-based training. If you don't practice something that you've learned, then you're going to really have a slower learning process and gaining that knowledge. So when we develop a scenario-based training, we really have to take our time before and while we're developing these scenarios. So we have to think to ourselves, what are our goals? What skills do you want that person or those people to develop? It is critical to have your experts in this particular field, you know, which means the experienced higher-ups, but also the lower-level employees who are kind of doing the day-to-day grind, you know, to kind of sit down and brainstorm and say, hey, what are we trying to accomplish here in this scenario, okay? And you don't have to rush this process, okay? Remember, you know, this is ongoing, and so by evaluating the scenario based on the training each time it's provided, it's going to eventually evolve and get better, but we need to start somewhere, and that is trying to figure out what are our training objectives, and then we try to figure out how we are going to apply those into scenarios. And I think that, you know, by remembering that if I'm just starting out a scenario-based program and I'm going to be doing this continuously, that it is going to be evolved. And it's not just going to be perfect the first time. We want to make it better and better and better. And it's kind of like Nike says, there is no finish line. We always have opportunity to improve the training and improve our employees. But another thing to think about when you're developing scenarios is the training has to be realistic. And when you have role players within this, they need to stick to the script. And sometimes we've had some issues even here at the Police Training Institute as we're developing our role players to tell them, we want them to understand what their actual role is, you know, and how they're supposed to react in certain situations. We don't want them to, you know, play stump the chump, you know, they're not going to win no matter what, or feel like, hey, this is my big chance to become, you know, this is my chance for my acting career, and I'm going to be doing some ad-libbing and exaggerating my roles, and we want them to stick to the script. The scenarios that you develop, two things here. It has to be doable, but it has to be challenging. So obviously doable might be too simple. Challenging could be too challenging. So you have to find that fine medium, and sometimes that takes, you know, practicing and developing scenarios over time. So remember, adults need to be challenged, but they cannot be set up for failure. They will make mistakes, okay, and it doesn't have to be perfect. So when you think about the scenarios and you're developing scenarios based on your training objectives, keep all of those things in mind. And another important aspect of scenarios is before your group actually goes in to perform the scenario, prior to beginning the scenario, you absolutely must have a briefing. You can't just say, okay, go in and do this scenario. Good luck. All right. So during this briefing, participants will be told the basics of the scenario they're performing, some additional information, you know, they may need reviewed prior to the learning, you know, like the classroom. You might kind of go over some of that again, and then take the time to answer their questions, because we're not setting them up for failure. You know, it's important to emphasize that, hey, you know what, you're going to make mistakes, and that's part of learning. Don't beat yourself up over mistakes. And I know there's so many people out there that are like, you know, I want to do perfect, I want to do great, and that's a great trait to have, but we need to emphasize to them, hey, you're going to make mistakes, it's okay. Okay, when I do briefing with recruits, I let them know, you know, that they're likely going to make mistakes. To expect it, it's okay. Okay, I also let them know that I've made mistakes in my career as a police officer, and it was not the end of the world because I learned from my mistakes. You know, that being said, scenarios which are not real life and not as dangerous and not as, you know, costly are the best time to make the mistakes. So get out there, do your best. You're going to make mistakes, but that's how you're going to learn, and that's okay. So we need to kind of keep that positive atmosphere. So, and depending on how I end the scenarios are, it's important to let everyone know, hey, everybody here is a safety monitor. I mean, it might be as simple as practicing, you know, a phone conversation, or interviewing somebody or somebody that's just simply angry. But if it gets to be very, you know, high-end scenario training that someone is performing, you know, everybody needs to know, hey, you're a safety monitor. We don't want anybody to get hurt. It's okay to, hey, time out at any time. And that includes your facility. Facilitators, your role players, and anybody observing the scenarios. We need to keep them safe. So then we also probably should have a brief for the role players. And sometimes the role players are also some of the employees. Sometimes you might bring in other role players, which is what we do at the Police Training Institute. And this is a chance for the role players to be reminded of their roles. Here are our training goals and objectives. Stick with the script. You know, you're not trying to win an Academy Award. We are trying to do this for the benefit of the person going through the scenario. It's not about you, it's about them. So we train everybody. We get the objective set up, develop some scenarios where we're able to actually practice the thing that are most important to practice. But then after the scenarios are over, it's very important to have proper facilitation. Okay, have to have a proper facilitation afterwards for discussion. That discussion is as valuable as the actual scenario they went through themselves. So, you know, what we try to push here at PTI, at the Police Training Institute, is first and foremost, as a facilitator, remain professional and treat everyone involved in the scenario and discussion with respect and dignity. You know, this is going to get them to buy in better. It's going to get them to want to return to do more scenarios, and that's how we develop our organization. The biggest thing to remember is that you are a facilitator, and that, of course, means you're facilitating. You're facilitating a discussion and learning. You know, everyone should be involved in the discussion. You know, everybody. It needs to be, you know, somebody from the role players to the people that went through it, the group that are watching, because they can learn that way too. But one of the things tough for facilitators, and it does take some practice, is we have a little saying, and actually it's in our communications class, that most people, you know, are simply waiting to talk. They're not very good active listeners. Your facilitator has to be an active listener and try to get everybody involved. So, you know, when the scenario is complete, the facilitator might start with a simple and short statement of something that was positive, you know, that's obvious to everybody and something they did positive. This is a good way to start that kind of that positive reinforcement. Then it's your job to facilitate. And when I say that, you are a facilitator, facilitate. I know I'm emphasizing it, but, you know, we get so many facilitators that we have to train. And when we train them, we say things like, okay, this is to facilitate, but unfortunately, sometimes I get those facilitators where they just want to talk and not listen. I'll say, okay, all right, you did this good, you did this bad, you did this good, you did this bad, and you know, the next thing you know, okay, next, you're done. But facilitating is a discussion with whoever went through the scenario, and you know, having them explain why they did what they did, and have those watching, you know, join in on the discussion. It is a facilitator's job to create a comfortable and respectable discussion with everyone there. Okay, participants watching, you know, are either waiting to take their turn or have already gone through the scenario. A lot of times, you know, it's a good way for them to learn too, because they're sitting there on the outside watching what's going on. They have so much less stress. They're thinking, oh gosh, I would have said this, done that, or, you know, this seems like a better idea. And then, you know, you can get them involved in the scenario. They may see so much more than those actually going through it. And we, when we have to facilitate, we have to ask questions and get a discussion going. You know, after the discussion, you know, rehash what they learned. So re-emphasize the most important training points. And here's another problem a lot of facilitators have a hard time with. We need to keep the learning points, the training objectives to a minimum. Adults can only retain, you know, a few points at a time that they're going to remember. Make them the most important things, but reemphasize them. And a little bit of detail in the context of why that's important. Because if you are just simply starting to impale them with your knowledge about everything you know, from your great career, from, you know everything, this is the way you do it, and this is the way I did it when I did this, and I'm, you know, the most person in the world, and then you're going to turn people off. They're going to think, okay, this person's a bit arrogant, and they're just telling us how great they are. And sometimes we like to call that facilitator the most interesting man in the world. He doesn't always drink beer, but when he does, and you know the rest of the story. But we don't want to be that guy. Okay, we don't want to be that guy. We want to get everybody involved. Everybody has life experiences and great knowledge. Let's get them involved. They can resolve so many of their own problems. You know, it's through discussion, the group, you know, may or may not have an agreement, you know, and that's okay if not everybody agrees on it. The point is not to reach a consensus, but to seek out and consider different interpretations of the problems, as well as a range of things that, you know, they might have done differently and maybe accomplished the same outcomes. So we don't have to have consensus, but we have to have that, you know, that information, that that discussion, and be honest with one another. But again, emphasizing in a respectful and, you know, treating people, you know, with respect and honor while we're talking to them. It's not just, you know, telling them, man, I can't believe you did this. That was ridiculous. Okay, so it's got to be, you know, it's got to be in a polite way. And remember, mostly important here, there is no failing in scenario-based training. Really emphasize this. You know, we expect you to make mistakes. That's okay. It's training. It's not real life. It's okay. And, you know, if you're unsure how to initiate the discussion, you know, there's some basic questions we can ask them. But the idea is to, you know what, I need to facilitate a discussion. We don't have to agree, but those discussions bring up some great ideas, and people share with each other, and they learn more tools that they can put in their toolbox from these people, whether they have experience in a particular job or simply just have life experiences. You know, we may learn from them, and in fact, some of the higher up ranking people and facilitators may learn from this. We are always constantly learning. So we're going to take another break, but, you know, when we get back, we're going to talk about maybe some of those basic ideas to kind of get that discussion going, because that's such an important part of, you know, facilitating after the scenario has been complete. So we will be right back, and when we are, we will delve into that.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
From disasters to cyber threats, it's hard to keep up with the myriad of risks facing businesses today. Risk Partners Alliance is a consortium of business and technology consultants whose focus is to identify and mitigate threats to the operation of your business, your critical systems, infrastructure, and information security. We create comprehensive business continuity programs, including risk assessment, emergency preparedness, crisis management planning, technical disaster recovery, and information security services. We provide hands-on crisis leadership team evaluation and training through scenario-based practices. Our experts are widely sought-after speakers because of their passion, excellence, and unique training methods, and have a 30-year track record of providing risk management and recovery services to a variety of industries. Our proven plans have been put into action in every major disaster since 1989. Find us online at riskpa.com or email info@riskpa.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Fear is Negotiable. You deserve some rest from worry. Contact us so we can help.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. If you have a question or comment about the program, please send us an email to info@riskpa.com. Again, that's info@riskpa.com. Or follow us on Twitter at Fear is Negotiable. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody. And again, this is Mike Schlosser with Fear is Negotiable. And we decided that maybe we should talk about, because sometimes it's hard, how do I facilitate a discussion without just saying, okay, this went well, this went bad, or just saying, you know, how do you think it went? But we can start with some very broad questions, but we need to end kind of getting a little more specific, and a lot of things just evolve through the conversation, and you'd be surprised how soon you're having an excellent conversation without having to actually ask too many questions. So we can keep questions fairly simple. You know, we can say things like, you know, when we're talking to the people that just went through this scenario under their stress, they say, hey, you know, what do you think went well? Because we do like the positive things, because there are positives and negatives. And then rather than say, hey, you know, what do you think you did that was just terrible? No, I mean, obviously, it's how we say things. What do you think you could have done better? But don't leave it at that, you know. And why do you think it could have been better, you know? What would you have done differently if this scenario to go through again? And you can keep simple, open-ended questions to the group. You know, like, does anyone have any comments? Sometimes that's enough to start bringing up a conversation. You know, does anyone have suggestions? So, and of course, as the conversation goes on, you know, the questions can get more specific regarding your specific training goals or your training objectives that you're trying to, you know, that you're trying to accomplish. You know, like, you know, hey, do you think that this objective was accomplished and you have the goals in front of you? You know, if not, you know, do you think you could have, done to accomplish that objective that you did? And that's not just for the people that went through it. It's nice to start with them, but that's also bringing in the observers. And again, the observers are going to, you know, have a lot of good information. We learn from observing. We learn from doing. We learn so many different ways. And when you're sitting on the outside without that stress, you might have some valuable insight to give. So, but if we're going to keep scenario-based training evolving, and again, you know, years and years at PTI before we've gotten where we're at, and we still believe there's always room for improvement. So, you know, it's important to gather, you know, the scenarios are done, and maybe right after the scenario, you know, you're giving everybody some sort of written evaluation, you know, how did it go, what could have gone better, and you know, you can come up with some much better things than I just said, but for some reason that's all I could think of. But, you know, just a written evaluation of, you know, suggestions and how it went, and what did you learn, and did you like it. But after that, sometime soon, sometimes within the next week or so, then I think you get everybody back together, they've had a chance to ponder it, and you have a feedback meeting. you know, and you've read their evaluations, and now your goal is to improve the scenarios for the future. And you can't just be, as the leader, I've decided this will work and that will work. We need to be active listeners. Listen to the people that went through the scenarios. How can we improve scenarios to improve your training? You know, how can we make it better so that you're getting that positive feedback? What are the things that we can do? And then a lot of people like to videotape the scenario so that, you know, those participating have a chance to watch. You can learn a lot by watching yourself. I know a lot of people aren't comfortable watching themselves or listening to themselves. They're like, man, I said that. I sound like that. I look like that. I said that. But a lot of times they don't remember because of under the stress things that they were doing or saying that if they see themselves doing it, they're thinking, oh, next time this is what I need to do. This next time this is what I'm going to say better. So then as you progress and you don't just stop with that one day of scenario training here, and I'll just very soon afterwards you have more scenarios, what's going to help? It's kind of an evolution and a continual process of scenario-based training. And sometimes that depends on the funding of an organization, but you can keep these fairly short, fairly simple, and, you know, try to work them in. I think that, you know, some of the things that, you know, I'll just talk a little bit about some of the examples of what we do here at the Police Training Institute and how we've evolved to this. And I realize everybody I'm talking to is not training for some of the worst case scenarios. And they're not going to have people shooting at them and things like that. Well, at least I hope not. But, you know, the recruits begin the academy and they learn some very basic information and skills, you know, and this will prepare them for some of the simple scenarios we start out with, you know, which is a good point because scenarios, as you go over time and do your scenarios, maybe your first day of scenario training is some very basic things, and then the next day of time you do scenario-based training, it's a little more complex. Maybe there's a little more controversy, and then they involve into the some of the harder, more complicated aspects of the job. But it's nice to start out with the easy ones to get them acclimated to scenarios, and these things are really important too. So we start off with very simple things. In fact, we train them their very first scenario. It seems very simple, but, you know, it still takes some practice. Their first call they ever handle is they're knocking on somebody's door. They're going in and taking a report on a theft or a criminal damage to property. But then again, remember, we have to plant that seed. We have to have some training before they do their scenario. So as simple as this scenario sounds, they have to have some classroom on the elements of defenses of theft and criminal damage to property. You know, they have to learn some communication skills. They have to learn some interviewing skills. You know, and that's like the classroom. They also have to learn some strategy and tactics. You know, it needs to become a habit for an officer when they approach someone's door, they don't stand right in front of the door. They stand to the side of the door. Okay, when they come in, they're observing, they're looking around. Are there any weapons? Is there anything in here I need to be concerned about? Even though it's a simple report, what could likely be a victim, but we know things can evolve quickly. And even control tactics. You wouldn't think there's would be much, you know, in the way of, you know, fighting or control tactics when you're handling just, you know, talking to a victim. But again, things we need to make a habit. When an officer is interviewing anybody, you know, we train them that they need to with their hands up and their weapon side back. They need to be distance, and they need to hold their notepad up high enough so that they can see the person they're talking to and they can see their surroundings. And these all sound like simple, basic things. But when the recruits go into that very first scenario, you know, they're actually a little bit nervous. They're being videotaped. You know, there's other people observing. And did they get a little nervous? They might say, you know, hey, good afternoon, I'm Officer Slaughter with the, and then they look down at their agency on their badge, you know, and with this police department, and I'm here to, and they're a little scared, a little shaky. But then after they go through a few scenarios like that, they get very comfortable. But even in those debriefings, you can say, hey, you know, you know, you did this well. You gathered all the information you needed to gather. You know, one of the things I noticed, you know, when you watch your video, it looked like maybe you were a little close. Or maybe your weapon side was toward them. It's not a dangerous call, but if we need to make these a habit because we know that things can evolve. So we start off simple like that, you know, and then we kind of get into, you know, a few more complicated things, and it evolved. You know, we were starting off with things like taking basic reports and basic vehicle stops and, you know, a basic suspicious person, and we're building up to things like violent domestics and high-risk arrests on traffic stops and people running from them and people shooting them. But it's over 12 weeks. We have scenarios that are designed so that they learn, and they do scenarios, they learn something else in the next week and do scenarios, and it just goes on and on. And this is an excellent way to learn, as opposed to the old military type police training institutes where you're in the classroom most of the time and then you're doing, you know, a little more military type stuff, and then at the very end they do a couple scenarios. If you can learn a little bits and pieces at a time, and then you can go evolve to another scenario, and then you can learn a little more that's a little more complicated or more dangerous, and then we develop scenarios for that, and it's just step by step. And that's how people are going to learn, develop those habits, and evolve into the best employee, the best police officer, the best military officer, or, you know, whatever the case may be for your organization. So it's important to, you know, not just say, okay, this is our annual training for scenario-based training. If you can fit it into your budget, and again, they don't have to be all-day scenarios. They can be little mini scenarios at just some meetings. They can be, you know, 3 to 5 minutes long. They can, you know, they can just, you know, work something in very short, and then they just continue to do that. And for police departments, a lot of times, you know, when they have roll call, they'll spend maybe 5-10 minutes, you know, working on a particular skill in a particular scenario, and then they're off and doing their job. And it's that continual, and I know I'm reemphasizing this so much, but I just think it's so important that that it needs to be continuous throughout any organization. And people learn by doing. You know, we have to set context, but people learn by doing. We need to allow them to do, to practice, and we need to make it as realistic as possible. And if you have some things within your organization that are very high stress, then you build up to those. But when you get to that really high stress, make it really high stress. Make it as realistic as possible. You've built up to that. They're not going to do perfect, but that's the best training you can get, because we want to try to simulate exactly what they're going to be handling in their professions. We've got to make it as real as we can. You know, so, you know, eventually we're getting up to, like, you know, some of our more dangerous scenarios, and we're getting into the you know, the domestics, and they're having to bring so many more of the things they've learned in the classroom and the strategy and tactics and the control tactics and the, you know, interviewing skills and things like that. So we build up to that, but they practice them in smaller ways leading up to it. So what we're going to do now is, when we're going to take a little break. When we get back from break, I'd really like to, you know, kind of emphasize how, you know, we've evolved from, you know, kind of the classroom learning to basic scenarios to a more of a high-end scenario, like a domestic situation. So we'll talk about that a little bit, but right now we'll take a little break, and I'll be right back with you.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
From disasters to cyber threats, it's hard to keep up with the myriad of risks facing businesses today. Risk Partners Alliance is a consortium of business and technology consultants whose focus is to identify and mitigate threats to the operation of your business, your critical systems, infrastructure, and information security. We create comprehensive business continuity programs, including risk assessment, emergency preparedness, crisis management planning, technical disaster recovery, and information security services. We provide hands-on crisis leadership team evaluation and training through scenario-based practices. Our experts are widely sought-after speakers because of their passion, excellence, and unique training methods, and have a 30-year track record of providing risk management and recovery services to a variety of industries. Our proven plans have been put into action in every major disaster since 1989. Find us online at riskpa.com or email info at riskpa.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Fear is Negotiable. You deserve some rest from worry. Contact us so we can help.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The business community's first choice in Internet talk radio. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. If you have a question or comment about the program, please send us an email to info@riskpa.com. Again, that's info@riskpa.com. Or follow us on Twitter at Fear is Negotiable. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody. Again, this is Mike Schlosser filling in for Pam Hill, and we're discussing scenario-based training, the importance of it, and actually the best ways to implement it. And it goes across the field for any organization you work for. Scenario-based training is definitely one of the best ways to learn your job or learn your trait. Before break, I talked and mentioned that we were going to talk a little bit about some of the higher-end scenarios that the recruits build up to. And, of course, when they build up to a domestic violence situation, that is definitely a high-stress situation. Because, you know, there is so much unknown. You know, that's one of the most dangerous and most common calls for police officers. So we are still using the same exact tactics from learning in the classroom, strategy and tactics and control tactics. But it's a little higher end and there's a little more involved. So they built up to the point where in the classroom they've learned the laws on, you know, domestic violence. There's so many laws on domestic violence we must understand. You know, as far as the strategy and tactics they learn, now it's even more important to, you know, think about your approach. Where do I park my squad car? You know, maybe you don't want to be seen initially. You know, how do I approach the house? Where do I stand at the door? Obviously not right in front of the door. What observations and what am I listening for as I approach the house? I mean, if somebody inside yelling, stop hitting me, and you're hearing somebody being hit, you know, you're going to go right in and help them. But if you're listening a little bit and finding out what they're arguing about, that might give you a little bit of few things to talk about. When you enter, it's very important not only to observe for weapons in these types of calls, but you're going to ask, you know, are there any weapons in the house, any other people in the house, any animals, anything I need to worry about? And it's important to separate the parties. But you're separating them so that they can't see each other, but then the officers have to see themselves. The officers have to see each other because, you know, they're backing each other up and they need to keep things safe. So, and they're all they have at that point. So there's so many little things which sound easy when you just say in a classroom or in a strategy and tactics, this is what you need to do. But when you do it in real life, you don't always remember everything. You don't do everything right. Remember, the role players are screaming, hollering, and yelling, and things are getting crazy. So, you know, we've built up to this, and a lot of these things have become habit. As far as the control tactics and arrest tactics at that point, you know, they need to have their skills on how to arrest somebody. If the person resists arrest, how to control them. And then, of course, they need to go through their cuffing and searching and things like that. So, but some of the most important things and, you know, the most important skill anyone can have, let alone a police officer, is knowing how to talk to people in common sense. And we teach them specific tactics on how to talk to people. And if you listen to one of my previous shows on verbal judo, you might be familiar with this. You know, we teach them things to say, things not to say. You know, when people are yelling and arguing at you and they're angry, we teach something called de-escalation techniques, de-escalation phrases. And it sounds so simple and they get it and they have a chance to practice them. But, you know, if you have somebody opening the door and they're yelling and screaming and hollering, get the F out of my house, and, you know, I didn't call you and blah, blah, blah. You know, there's ways to deflect that. You know, sir, you know, I understand you didn't call. Somebody else called. You know, I know you don't want me to come into your house, but unfortunately, I can't leave until, you know, I make sure everybody's okay. Hey, do you mind if I just step in and chat with you for a few minutes? Make sure everything's right. I'll be out of here a lot sooner. And those are the tactics and the kinds of things we want them to learn. But it's inherent for people when people are yelling and screaming at them for things to say things that they shouldn't say, like, hey, calm down or shut up or sit down over there. And whenever you have somebody that's angry with you, that's only going to make them angrier. So, but we have recruits do it in scenarios. They know these things, they practice these things, but this is very high end, maybe for the first time, and they yell, "Calm down." And then they go, they're thinking to themselves, "Oops," and kind of look over at the facilitator and the everybody else, and their eyes pop out, and they're like, "Oh man, I just said something I shouldn't say," because now they're getting angry. So they're thinking like, "Dope," you know, and I don't know if your dope is like from the Simpsons thing, or for me, it's the noise that Skipper made on Gilligan's Island, but that may be before some of your time. But what we do with our role players is we actually allow them time. You know, we allow the officer time to continue to try their de-escalation phrases and try to calm things down and give them another chance to do that so that they can have those positive interactions and they can have those positive results, you know, when you're, you know, when you failed. So training the role players, we also train the role players on some of the same tactics. They sit in on some of the same classes on what's verbal judo, how should they be cuffed, how should they separate us, so that they know what to do and what not to do depending on how, you know, the officer is handling it. So you know, training your role players is very important in this part, so everybody's on the same page. And even though in this situation where there could be some things that went wrong, maybe even it's somebody made an arrest when they didn't have probable cause or didn't, you know, or the other way around. But, you know, again, it brings out conversation. It brings out discussion. And it's always in a positive and respectful way. And then they're going to have a chance to, you know, for other scenarios similar to this. And they just keep doing the scenarios. And by the end of the 12 weeks, you know, I feel like these guys are ready to, you know, hit the road. I'm hit the road running. They're ready to go. And, you know, it just takes that practice. It takes that evolution. And, you know, remember, when you're facilitating a scenario, you're creating a discussion, you're talking about the things that went well, you're talking about things that need improvement, and you're involving everybody in the discussion. And everybody learns that way, not just the one that's involved in the scenario. So it's really important to do that, you know. Then we'll build up our making vehicle stops where we're simply making a stop and we're issuing a traffic ticket. Maybe those scenarios build up, and now we're making a stop, and the person is angry at you. Don't you have anything better to do? Or trying to get your quota, you know, and they're not getting angry back. They're using their good communication skills to keep things de-escalated, and then those build up to the point where people are jumping out of the cars, running from them, and they're, you know, maybe shooting back at them. And of course, these are with our pretend weapons, shooting what we call airsoft weapons, but they are making like little white BBs, so you are definitely going to feel it. But these are all good learning points, and it's just remembering, you know what, you're not, your scenario isn't to show me that you can do it perfect. Your scenarios over time are showing me that you're improving and that you're learning and that you're going to be ready for that next phase in training, because training is always going to continue. They're not going to be put on their own when they get back on the road. They're going to have a field training officer. And, you know, like I kind of mentioned before, experience is the best way to get good at things. But you can't just say for somebody brand new, here's all my experience. Go for it. You know, it takes time. But if we can give them that real life experience, it's almost like you're giving them experience, and in a small way, to better prepare them to keep them safe. And regardless of your organization, you want to constantly improve things. You want to improve your employees, improve your organization. That improves your organization overall, and you know, maybe the profits of the organization. It depends on what your goals are. But I think by giving some of these police examples, I think it, you know, and how it evolves and how to facilitate, you know, hopefully some of these things will come in handy when you decide to develop these scenarios. But, you know, scenarios, I've used scenarios in other aspects of my life. I had a martial arts studio for 17 years, and I taught, you know, what we call stranger danger to young people. And I know every parent says, okay, stranger danger, don't approach strangers, but we would actually practice at a park where we would have somebody pull up in a vehicle to ask for directions and things like that. And we would, you know, the young students would take off running. Sometimes they'd stay and talk. But the more we did the scenarios, the more they knew, I don't know this person, and it doesn't matter what they look like, but I don't know them. I'm just taking off and I'm getting out of there. You know, I also did the same thing for my children for years and years and years, with the fire alarm. I would intentionally set off the fire alarm. They knew they had to get down on their knees, crawl out of the house, and meet out between the two big trees in front of the house. Yep. Did they think it was silly after time? Sure. You know, and they were like, even when they were getting older, especially, I suppose, when they were teenagers and you know, they're thinking, oh, gosh, Dad, push the alarm again. But I guarantee you, every time they heard that alarm, they got down on their knees, they walked out, crawled out. And we met at that, we met between the trees and we knew we were safe and we knew that we needed at that point to call the fire department or go to a neighbor's house and things like that. Scenario-based training, whether it's with kids or, you know, adults or in any organization, it becomes more of a habit. And I think it's just a really good way to develop, you know, the skills needed from the knowledge that you learn. And just in closing, I want to thank Pam again for letting me fill in for her today. I always enjoy doing these things. And hopefully from this last hour, maybe you've at least picked up a couple of ideas or tools that maybe you can put into your toolbox to help improve your organization and maybe even yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us this week for Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. We hope you'll tune in again next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition with host Pamela Hill on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll identify more of the best practices in business survival then.
The information and ideas presented on this show are for informational purposes only. Please consult a business continuity, security, or disaster recovery professional before implementing any plans or ideas discussed on this show. The implementation of any protocol is at the sole discretion and responsibility of our listeners.